talk a little bit about the Chicago theater community, because to me that feels very, very strong and unique. Maybe only outside of London, perhaps, that I've seen that sort of everybody working, pulling together and supporting each other.
Well, maybe it's my Brit roots. Ultimately, you can hear some of you can hear like the hint of the ruins of an accent that once was. I was brought up.
You're not just affected.
Yeah, no, mostly. I like to tell people it's about 70% pretension.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, whatever it is, wherever you are. Thanks for subscribing, streaming, or downloading and listening to us on your computer or tablet or phone. I'm Austin Titchener, one third of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, and you're listening to this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast, number 558, Theater in Chicago. The Writers Theater in the Chicago suburb of Glencoe, Illinois, has just opened the world premiere of Trevor the Musical, a Broadway-bound production based on the Academy Award-winning short film, which led to the creation of The Trevor Project, an ongoing suicide prevention hotline for LGBTQ kids. I spoke with Artistic Director Michael Halberstam last January, and our conversation about Writers Theater specifically covered so much more ground about theater generally, and especially musical theater, that I wanted to share the rest of that conversation with you now.
I was brought up in the UK and I moved over to the States in 1980, and theatre really, when I was growing up at least, was just a part of your daily bread. It was everywhere. It was on the news, it was in the media, it was on the radio, the, whatever the big musical playing in the West End was, the whatever the hit song from that musical would be in the Top of the Pops charts.
Yeah.
So there was a... You were certainly conscious of theater as a nationally subsidized, supported, and engaged art form.
Right.
You come over to the States, and I think as the great Zelda Fitchhandler said, they didn't ask us to come and we came anyway.
Yeah.
There was a realization that we felt that the country needed a regional theater movement here, and these great pioneers, Greg Boyd, Zelda Fitchhandler, Gordon Davidson, started by building these wonderful institutions in major cities across the country.
Mm-hmm.
Chicago has an interesting situation, being uniquely positioned in between the two coasts, the third coast, if you will, because for those of you who haven't visited Chicago, we have this honking great freshwater lake on our shoreline, which feels like as big as any body of significant body of water in the, on the globe.
You can't see the other side, and there are tides. Yeah. It's amazing.
Yeah. So I think Chicago has been a place traditionally, I think, as has a sort of Midwestern value system, and by that I mean that it tends to be a bit family centric. And not necessarily just traditional families, but it is a place where you think you can come and actually raise a family, whether that family be LGBTQ or heteronormative or you and your two dogs. But you can at least live comfortably in Chicago. Rents are affordable. Yeah. Neighborhoods are approachable. We have 4 or 5 weeks of terrible weather in the winter, but apart from that, the climate is actually quite manageable. But consequently, at the center of our universe, and it makes sense to me that out of these Midwestern familial values emerges a series of ensembles that grow out of the Chicago theater movement, not the least of which being our great and glorious Steppenwolf Theater Company, which in many ways to me has always been the sun at the center of our little galaxy here in Chicago that we all revolve around and allow to influence us and support us.
And coincidentally also started here on the North Shore.
North of me in Highland Park, which is one suburb north of Glencoe.
Yeah.
So what is the Chicago style? Well, when I moved to town back in the 80s, in the late 80s, Chicago was renowned for actors who could bash their head against a wall and bleed real blood and pee real pee on stage. And there was a sort of aesthetic of foundational truth. That has shifted, I think, as more and more trained actors have moved into town.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not essentially inventing a technique, which is what Chicago created. But they have... These trained actors, rather than coming to New York, sometimes where you, let's not just say New York, but I think there is often a performance style on on a larger scene, which tends to be a little bit more about presentation, declamation, facing the audience, and playing the house to no small degree. Because of course, audiences, critics, award ceremonies, they like that kind of acting. Chicago actors, because the stakes are lower, tend to, and by lower, I guess I don't mean that the plays are any less important, but if you open very well in Chicago and you get a great review from the papers, it is not likely that your life will be changed the way you might from an LA Times review for a movie or a New York Times review for a play. And so consequently, in Chicago, there's this sense when you succeed, everybody says, that's fantastic. What are you doing next? And when you fail, everybody says, that's too bad. What are you doing next? So there's a I think, an ability to really focus your work on making honest, truthful, eye-to-eye connections with your fellow actors on stage, and allowing the audience to be moved by the experience of an emotional communication that's happening between artists through the medium of the text in a theater in which the audience can lose themselves, whereas I think some cities tend to embrace more of a bravura acting style, where the connection is more on, oh my God, look, he's like, what an amazing voice she has. Oh, she's crying real tears. Oh, he's so astonishing. Look at, listen to that prowess. Sometimes I think you lose some necessary question of the play be then to be considered when you lose the connection of text to audience. Does that make sense?
It does make sense. It feels more about intimacy, going back to where we started our conversation, person to person connection rather than spectacle, or at the expense of spectacle.
Now, and I think sometimes that works enormously to our credit with productions like David Cromer's, well, anything that he directed basically in Chicago, from Orson's Shadow to Our Town to his Streetcar Named Desire for us to Adding Machine. David is, I think, a really thrilling example of when theater is working, Chicago theater is working at its finest, and how exportable that that aesthetic has been in terms of how successful he's been in New York and to no small degree, I think, in London. But we don't always necessarily have the highs here that you sometimes get in a London or in a New York. Maybe because we don't have the resources. I don't know. But like a Hamilton, I feel like, could only emerge out of New York. Although it must be said, you know, in no small part due to the visionary leadership of Oscar Eustace. You look at the work that's come out of the Public Theater, which in a way is our equivalent of the National Theater. I mean, literally industry-changing productions, from Susan Laurie Park's Father Comes Home from the Wars to Here Lies Love to Hamilton to Fun Home. You know, these all in many ways took their genres, straight white men, took their genres and turned them upside down for the American stage, at least.
Hi, I'm Shannon Cochran, and you're listening to the Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast.
Where can you RSE the RSE? This is the final week of Joe Maudsley, Matt Pearson, and James Percy performing William Shakespeare's long-lost first play Abridged at the Gilded Balloon in Edinburgh. They're performing every day except Wednesday through next Monday, August 28th, at the Gilded Balloon Teviot near George Square. Our U.S. fall tour begins next month with performances of all the great books abridged, William Shakespeare's long-lost first play abridged, and the ultimate Christmas show abridged in Culver and South Bend, Indiana, West Long Branch, New Jersey, Aiken, South Carolina, Davis, California, Laramie, Wyoming, Asheville, North Carolina, Maryville, Tennessee, Somerville, New Jersey, San Jose, California, Algona, Iowa, Reston, Virginia, and La Mirada, California. Also next month, you can see us perform the complete works of William Shakespeare abridged, revised in Hong Kong and Singapore. Next winter, we'll be performing William Shakespeare's long-lost first play abridged off-Broadway at the New Victory Theater in New York City. And a year from now, we'll return to the Pittsburgh Public Theater to close out their season with our production of William Shakespeare's long-lost first play abridged. As always, the very best way to stay up to date about all of our worldwide performance dates is to sign up for the Reduced Reader, our email newsletter. Go to ReducedShakespeare.com and click on the link to subscribe and check out our touring page for specific box office venue and ticket information. And now back to my conversation with Michael Halberstam, the artistic director of the Writers' Theater.
yeah, Terry Teachout called you guys the best theater in the country, which is right on. But he also said the musical is a form in decline. And I went, wait, what? What? Fun Home and Hamilton and Dear Evan Hansen. Anywho.
The musical is a form in decline just because it's we're having these few extraordinary productions of new work like Fun Home, like Dear Evan Hansen, and like Hamilton. Remember that most of the musicals that have been coming into New York in the last few seasons have often been either unsuccessful adaptations of movies or jukebox musicals. And again, I don't actually, there's nothing wrong with taking a movie and turning it into a musical if you can make it a better musical than it was a movie.
Right.
But if you're just trying to capitalize on the success of a film and throwing in a few songs, you're not necessarily justifying the experience. I mean, Billy Elliot is a sort of fantastic example of a play and of a musical in which, and a genre bending production, not the, I think, having almost everything to do with the its conception and direction and the manifestation, its choreography, etc., where they took a film and actually a very good film to begin with, but still justified the experience of the play as throwing the story of Billy Elliot into a slightly different light.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
It does make sense. And I hear what you're saying. I guess I'm inclined to be more optimistic. Yes, you're absolutely right. Some of these shows. Well, and I even saw plays based on movies. I saw Shakespeare in Love in London, which is coming to Chicago and Ashland. And it's a really, 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 really good play of an exquisite, to my money, perfect film.
I would say that the play is enjoyable. I enjoyed it in the movie. I enjoyed it when I saw it in the theater. It made me long for the movie.
Yes.
And you know, when you look at let's take a sort of an old timey example, like taking Shaw's Pygmalion and turning it into My Fair Lady. When I see Shaw's Pygmalion, I miss the songs. When I see My Fair Lady, I miss the text.
Perfect. Yes.
Which is a nice fusion. It's to say this piece actually stands alongside its original and complements. I think part of the problem is that a lot of these projects are being born out of cynicism.
Yeah.
People are saying, let's get such and such a director and such a film and such an actor, and we'll get such and such a pop star to write the score, and it'll make us lots of money. As opposed to, I woke up this morning with an inspiration and I have to tell this story. Yeah. And this is the way I have to tell this story.
Right.
If you start from a theater is ultimately an art form. And if you start from a fiscal premise, a fiscally based foundation in terms of why you are making theater, I think it's very hard to make it work. Sometimes it will work.
Yeah.
But by and large, I think it's the passion that drives the project.
Yeah, it's got to start, or at least get to pretty quickly, from a real place, a place of personality, a personal passion.
I mean, coming back down to the Chicago acting style, and I think this is sort of worth having a talk about just in terms of the form itself, right? Yeah. We were very affected by the rising of the film industry as an art form, and I think for a period of time there everything was a sort of kitchen sink play and everybody was trying to spill out their guts on stage, which is why I think Chicago had such an impact on the national scene in America when it first when Steppenwolf first emerged out into the national conversation and international conversation. But I think we've started to refine that and cycle back to like why this is a play as opposed to we're not just seeing movies now realized on stage with only one location.
Right.
So I think we've started to realize that audiences get actually quite tired of that.
Yeah.
So celebrating a theatricality while finding an identity for that technique, which to me at least is about trying to keep actors present in the moment, experiencing the action of the play as a live, organic, and present moment event. Does that make sense?
Yes.
So we spend a lot of time in rehearsals, I think, at the theater in general, trying to articulate, like, what is the human event that comes as a consequence of this conversation?
Right.
So, for instance, this is a conversation that I often have with actors at the beginning of rehearsal. If I take out a gun right now and I shoot my stage manager, what is the action in the room? And often in a play, you'll see people starting to get angry, or you'll still see people crying, and because they're trying to show you what they rehearsed they think they would feel in the aftermath of that action.
Right.
And at that point, you now no longer have a truthful event.
Right.
Because if somebody pulls out a gun in a room unexpectedly and kills somebody, mm-hmm. everybody else in the room is galvanized by that action and is thinking only of how they can save their own life.
Right.
So, for instance, again, let's take that now back to a play, that idea. Let's put that to Hamlet. I frequently see Hamlet where, at the beginning of the closet scene, Polonius is killed. Mm-hmm. And then they sort of push his body upstage and they just get on with this big scene between Hamlet and Gertrude.
Yeah.
It's okay, if I stabbed somebody, mm-hmm. particularly the prime minister, who happens to be, in this case, a master spy,
yeah.
In my mother's wardrobe, chances are that's going to inform the rest of the scene. And there's a reason that this fantastic playwright puts that on stage as a catalytic event in terms of how wildly out of control the emotions tumble in that scene.
Yeah.
Not the least of which reason has to do with the fact that there is a corpse on the stage and that the protagonist, Hamlet, or antagonist, depending on how you look at the play, has a knife in his hand.
Yeah, yeah.
Or a sword in his hand, and has just committed an act of murder. So yeah. What Gertrude is saying to him, and what does she do, by the way? Immediately after the scene, she goes right back to her husband after mm-hmm. swearing to Hamlet.
Mm-hmm.
You know, yeah, absolutely, mummy's going to be lovely, mummy's going to be so good, mummy's going to do everything that you say from now on, Hamlet. Yeah, I love you, I love you, I love you. And then she goes right back to Claudius and falls into his arms.
Yeah.
Is she changed? Of course she's changed. And does the relationship between Claudius and Gertrude shift after that? Yes, it absolutely does. But it's still informed by the tangible events of that action. And the people that you then cast in that production
right.
are going to let you know how they would respond in that scenario. And you're then going to create a unique and fresh take on that scene on the basis of asking real questions about how real people behave in real circumstances. Does that make sense?
It makes total sense. And the challenge, I guess, in the examples you provide is aside from running madly screaming from the room when you've got lines to say, so you've got to
navigate. I had an actress once say to me in another production of Hamlet that I was directing. Hamlet was getting quite racy. He dragged Ophelia up with him to sort of act out Country Matters. The actress playing Gertrude said to me, but well, I would leave the room if that happened. I mm-hmm. said, you might leave the room,
mm-hmm.
but Gertrude stays.
Yeah.
And there is your job, to navigate the difference between what you would do.
That's right.
And find out how this woman chooses to stay, because we are not our characters. And if we redact our characters to our own mundane behaviors, right. we redact the scope and nature of the plays themselves.
And right there is the actor's job.
Yes.
Make it truthful to how you would behave, but also within the context of the lines that you've been given and the scope of the play.
And if you're a good director, you've cast the play well so that all the people in these roles at least inhabit a region of the character that you're putting them into, so that to no small degree your job is to create a safe space for the actor and to be able to fully inhabit the character and find out where the differences and similarities are and then experiment over the course of the rehearsal process with how they want to articulate the emotional and put together the emotional journey.
That's it for this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast. If you're in the Chicago area before September 17, 2017, go to thewriterstheater.org and get tickets for Trevor the Musical. It really is the feel-good hit of the summer, and the show has an amazingly talented and incredibly charming cast. See it if you can. Then send us your musical adaptation of an Oscar-winning short film via email to feedback@reducedshakespeare.com. You can also engage with us and other fans on Facebook or Twitter. You can find easy links to all these social networks at our website, reducedshakespeare.com. You can also follow me on Twitter at Austin Titchener, and the RSC is now on Instagram too at Reduced Shakespeare Company. You can follow Trevor the Musical on Twitter at Trevor Musical. You can follow Michael Halberstam on Twitter at HalberMole. And you can follow the Writers Theater too at Writers Theater. Thanks as always to actor with a gun Matthew Croak, web services by Ginger Power Limited, music by John Weber and Garage Band. Our random fan shout out
this week goes to Margaret McLaren. No reason, it's just random. Special thanks to Shannon Cochran, the amazing Chicago actress who will be playing Lady Bracknell in The Importance of Being Earnest at the Writers Theater later this fall. And finally, thanks very much to you for listening. I'm Austin Titchener, 558 1674ths of the Reduced Shakespeare Company.
So that's why we've got to keep doing the work that we do.
Indeed. I feel like theater is like the lifeguard who stands at the edge of the whirlpool. And yeah. As people are being dragged down into the whirlpool, we have to swim into the edge and put our lives on the line and pull them back. Show them humanity as it could be. Mm-hmm. If we all came collectively together to address the great issues that face us.
This podcast is a production of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, reducing expectations since 1981. Go to reducedshakespeare.com for performance dates, actor bios, email newsletters, and so much less.
So much less.